We got three seasons. You got non-conference season, you got conference season, then you got postseason. And it's one and done time, and you got to lock in. Everybody's got to give 5 to 10% more in their focus, their energy, and just understanding what we need to do to win.
Norm Roberts talking about KU as they have their first-round game coming up on Thursday. Welcome to Sports Ticket. Wade, Jason, and Dusty with you as KU is the number one seed in the West, 27-7. And they will play the 16th seed Howard, who is 22-12. They're a very good three-point shooting team. They don't handle the ball that well, so that'll be interesting. And you can hear it on Z96.3 Lake and the Jayhawk Network coming up Thursday with pregame at 12:30. NCAA tournament begins tonight, believe it or not, with play-in games, or the first four, whatever you want to call it. They're play-in games. The 16 seeds in the South meet in the first game at 5:40 on True TV. Southeast Missouri State takes on Texas A&M Corpus Christi. The winner will be crispy and will be burnt to a pulp against the number one overall seed Alabama in the first round on Thursday. In the Midwest, 11 seeds Pittsburgh and Mississippi State play the second first four game tonight, 8:10 on True TV. The winner will take on 6 seed TCU on Friday in Denver. I will say this again. The NCAA tournament is not perfect. I enjoy the NCAA tournament. I don't think we need the first four at all. I think we could have kept it at 64. It causes problems in your brackets, filling them out. As I went through last night with my 9-year-old, like, how am I supposed to know to pick this one? I don't know who's winning. I'm like, you're going to have to wait till Thursday morning, but that's not ideal when you gather brackets for contest and so forth and so on, and people don't want to forget about turning in their bracket right before 11 o'clock on Thursday. That is not ideal. There has been some rumors that the tournament may grow to 96 or 128 someday. Please don't do that. You water it down. It is fine the way it is, or it was, and now we've got the play-in games. But if you're going to do the play-in games, or I'm sorry, the first four, then take the last four teams that made it. I don't like how the 16 seeds, two 16 seeds, play each other tonight. I don't like it because they earned their spot. They won their tournament. Mm-hmm. So let them enjoy it. Let the little guy enjoy it. And you flat, and the number one seed should know who they get to play. You know what I'm saying? Like the number one seed, I know it shouldn't be that big a deal to decide Alabama, how are they going to worry about Southeast Missouri State or Texas A&M Corpus Christi. But we do now have history that proves that a 1 can lose to a 16. So to me, it's not fair to the number one overall seed to not know who their opponent is until after tonight anyway. And secondly, it's not fair to the 16s that earn their spot by winning their conference tournaments, albeit small conferences. I think the last four teams that got in should play each other. I don't think NC State should be playing Creighton. I think NC State should play tonight. I mean, we've got Pitt and Mississippi State. NC State was one of the last four in, according to most people. Why aren't they playing? Like, I don't understand, and I'm not worried about the sixth seed not knowing who they play. You're a sixth seed. It is what it is. But take the last four teams. Everybody knows there's an overall seeding chart, 1 through 68. Take 65, 66, 67, 68. Play 64 versus 68, 65 through 68. So 65 through 68. So you take on 65 versus 68, 66 versus 67, and then you put yourself in the bracket when you win. Why are we having the 16 seeds that got automatic qualifying bids? Why do they have to play their way in? I don't understand that.
In that scenario, the way the bracket's set up, you'd have to have the last eight teams play each other.
Because
you want to get rid of the 16s playing each
other. Right.
So you'd have to have the last eight that are in playing each other if you want to get rid of that. But I agree with you on that part of it. Like, I don't think the 16 should have to play each other. I always thought it was weird when they went to 65. That was the strangest thing in the world. Like, why do you just kick an at-large team out?
Exactly.
Keep it at 64. What are we doing here? And then that's when they started making the 16s play against each other for that one spot when they had 65 teams in the field. And so they just expanded on that part of it when they put it to 68 and then just put – I think the original concept was, I would hope, was to have the last four in play each other and then the four 16 seeds play each other.
Right.
And so I have never understood – how a team can be the last one in and not have to play in a first four game.
Yes.
Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Like, I think that should just, even if you're going to keep the 16 seed part of it, the last four in should be playing in those play-in games.
I kind of
without question.
An idea I kind of liked was just leave it at 64, but if you're going to have, if you wanted some extra games, have four, you know, you have a committee that picks teams anyway. So have this committee pick the four conference regular season champions out of these smaller conferences that take the top four that won their regular season conference and have a challenge against the last four in. And then if you wanted those extra games, and then you can have a chance for those teams that might be lost in their conference tournament. But you know, like say Charleston. Charleston was what, 31-2 or something like that. And if they would have lost in their conference tournament, give them a chance to challenge one of the last four in. That's how I would do it if we had to do these games. But well, it is what it is. There, you know.
This is how they basically do it, and I don't understand it fully. Yeah. But their overall seed list, they've got obviously your 16s are your four worst teams. So they're basically saying we're taking the four worst teams and they're going to play their way into the tournament. Well, based on that logic, then you should take the bottom eight seeds. That means Princeton, UNC Asheville, Northern Kentucky, and Howard should have to play their way in. Like, why does Howard not have to play their way in?
Yeah,
but Texas A&M Christy does. That I don't understand that. Well, it's based on seeding. Okay. Well, then why is it that we then jump to the 44 overall seed Pittsburgh? Okay, versus the 43 seed Mississippi State and the 45 seed Arizona State versus Nevada. And oh, by the way, why isn't 43 playing 46 and 44 playing 45 instead of 43 playing 44 and 45 playing 46? That's weird. But it's probably geography and placing them in the bracket. That's probably part of that. But to me, there's no consistency to it. You're basically saying the four worst teams seed-wise, we're going to have them play in. Okay, and then we're going to have the four last at-larges we're going to have in. To me, the last eight at-larges should be the ones you should have because you didn't automatically qualify. You needed to be chosen by the human committee to be in. And so if you did it by that, okay, that I mean, you'd have more. First of all, I think it'd be more intriguing and interesting games to watch tonight. Well, I mean, can you imagine if you had North Carolina versus Oklahoma State tonight? Those are two bubble teams. I mean, have those two play each other and Wisconsin play against had they made the tournament. So you got Carolina, Oklahoma State. They were on the bubble. Let's say they got two of the last bids. And you had who was the other ones that were there? Rutgers. Rutgers was one that people said should have been in. Okay, Rutgers plays. Yeah, it's not as sexy, but it's better than Texas A&M Christy versus Fairleigh Dickinson or whatever the heck we got. You got Rutgers versus Arizona State. You know, Pitt, Mississippi State's okay, what we got there. Nevada has to play their way in against, Arizona State, Pittsburgh against Mississippi State. But there would be a potential to have a much better viewing audience than having two 16s play each other tonight and then two 16s play tomorrow night. And I still don't understand why Northern Kentucky doesn't have to play their way in. Why, like, not way in, but I mean, if they already are in, why does Howard automatically get an automatic slot? Well, they're the seeded 64. Well, Vermont seeded 59. They don't do a play-in game, but I just don't understand it fully. I'm sure there's reasoning to it. If you're going to have four 16s have to play the win, shouldn't all the 16s have to do that? Or
yeah,
none of them have to do it.
Yeah, I got a message saying that if you seed them and have that last eight teams play, and there's potential where a conference matchup could happen really, really early in the tournament. But, you know, if you don't want to do it like 1 through 8, then do it how you do the rest of the bracket, but make those last eight teams be the ones that are playing in these first four games, right?
Your like, last eight at large.
Whether you have to make them and make it work to where there's not a conference matchup in the first round or whatever, that's fine. Then fix that part
of it. They would be able to do it.
They would just like they make the tournament bracket, yes. They would be able to make this work if they would decide to do that.
Yes.
So not necessarily seed the last eight teams 1 through 8 maybe, but make sure those are the
arrange
teams
arrange them to where they don't play each
games.
Other in the play-in. Yes.
Yeah.
Sure. That's not that big a deal. That could be easily done.
They put the bracket together on purpose like that anyway.
Right.
And so you're... I think there maybe has been the round of 32, maybe a team is – there's been a conference matchup there, but it doesn't – there's not an actual normal, usually a chance until the Sweet 16 that would happen. But
right.
You can make it work.
You could. So anyway, that's just my observation. Does anybody get super excited? I'm never excited about the first four in.
The only time
I was excited is Wichita State played. Well, Wake Forest played K-State one
K-State
year.
K-State played.
That was interesting. But there's a tie because of the state. Wichita State was in the play-in one time. But at least those are names. I mean, how do you get excited about Texas A&M Crispy and Southeast? I say Crispy every time. Texas A&M Corpus Christi and Southeast Missouri State. And the other thing is, then they get that to count as an NCAA tournament win. Which I'm like, you beat another 16. So if a 14 loses to a 3, a 16 that beat another 16 has one more tournament win than the 14 seed. I don't like that either. Just you should have kept it this. Just 64. We didn't need to go this far. There's, because we still bitch and moan about who's the 69th team.
Yeah.
And there's chances for four more teams. Well, if that's the case, then let's just expand it and allow everybody to play. If we're worried about hurting people's feelings, it's college basketball. We complain about who's on the bubble and the outside looking in. Then let's just go ahead and make it, as I think Bob Knight said it once and other people, just go ahead and let everybody play. Have a full-fledged bracket. You add a few rounds, and you seed it 1 through 328 or whatever it is. And be done with it, because I just don't think this moves the needle. Tonight's games don't move the needle. Tomorrow's night's games don't move the needle. And on top of that, it's in Dayton, Ohio. I mean, wow. No offense to Dayton, Ohio, but who's running up to Dayton to see these games?
Yeah.
You put these games in Vegas. Hey, you put these games in Vegas now. You might get some people go, you know what? I'll take a couple days off during spring break. I'll go to Vegas. Who is going to raise their hand and go, spring break, I'm going to Dayton, Ohio, baby.
Spring break, woo!
Woo-hoo! Dayton, here I come. No, Las Vegas would be a great place to go. Go where it's on the beach or something. But Dayton, Ohio, and I know there's probably a reason for that too, but this doesn't move the needle, guys. I don't think they make a heck of a lot more money by these four teams being in. I'm all for more teams being in so more teams experience it, but it just makes me scratch my head. If you're going to add more teams, and just go a full another round. Go 96. I don't want 96, but we draw the line at 69. And we draw the line no more at 68. That's it. 68 is the most we're going to take. Why? Just why?
These giant brackets that, you know.
Why don't we have a quadruple header today and tomorrow and go ahead and make it, you know, 76 teams? 64 was great.
Yeah, the brackets, the ones that count your, you know, these huge companies that do these huge bracket contests, they don't even count them. They don't count these games. They just wait until they're 64, and then they start.
Right. And like, you're filling out a bracket. Like, what if you think Arizona State's going to make a run? Well, you're going to be in big trouble if they lose in the play-in. It's not good for bracket people either. Anyway, I'm done.
Yeah, you just sit around and wait. Like, I'll be honest. I've watched some of these, like, the ones that would be, like, the 11 seeds against each other. I turned the TV on to True TV at 5:40 for the 16 seed games, and I'm not even watching it. It's just on in the background. Like, I'll have three TVs in my living room this week and then in my computer if there's a fourth game going at the same time. But it's like I don't know who actually watches the 16
seed. You have to have some emotional, you know, tie to the, like.
Yeah, I mean, if you went to Southeast Pittsburgh, Missouri State, then people might be watching that. But those 11 seed games, there have been times where I've actually watched some of those games. Because they're Power 5 schools playing in it.
That's my point.
It makes it more exciting.
That's my point.
To watch those games. So, yeah, exactly. So, if you had the last eight teams in, more people would be watching those games.
Instead of 16.
People are like, I'm going to turn my TV on at 5:40 to watch Southeast Missouri State play Texas A&M Corpus Christi. I mean, not unless you went to those schools, people aren't really doing that.
No, I hear you.
Like I said, it's on in your background, but you're not actually paying attention to it.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'll be a shitty daddy. Should have kept it the way it was. All right.
I think a lot of people agree with you.
The NCAA tournament sleepers. All right. So all my family filled out their brackets. My oldest has a 3, a 6, a 1, and a 2 in the Final Four. You want to guess who the 6 is? It's probably a prominent name.
If you just said
prominent,
it's a prominent name.
Prominent name.
Kentucky.
Yep. He's got Kentucky in there. I've got a 1, 1, 2, and 5, and the 5 is a blue blood in Duke. My wife has 3 2s and a 10. She has three. Wow. She has three Pac-12 schools in the Final Four.
Man,
like, well, you might be right, honey. I don't know. My youngest has 3 2s and a 1, and he's got Texas winning it all. And he's got Texas KU in a rematch in the national semifinals with Texas beating him, which I wouldn't disagree with that. His bracket didn't look too bad, but we always look at these brackets. And go, well, that was Well, that's a good bracket. And then after the first couple of days, that's a horrible bracket. What were you, what were you thinking? Like, interesting things my family has. Let me see here. Let's see what my youngest has that really stands out. Nothing super crazy. Oh, he's got Oral Roberts, the Elite Eight, my youngest.
Nice.
So I said, well, I've got Duke in the Final Four, son. So one of us is going to have a really bad bracket. My oldest has... He's got, wow, my oldest has Oral Roberts in Elite Eight, too. Ha, ha, ha. Interesting.
I may pick him to win that first game, but I don't think I'd take him that deep.
Well, but, you know, usually there's some kind of seed. There's usually a double-digit seed that makes at least a Sweet 16
Friend's
every
daughter
year.
Picked Furman to go to the Elite Eight.
I got Furman beating Virginia in the
Who's,
first game.
Who did?
My One of my friend's daughter. Oh, okay. She's like 11.
My wife's got Virginia knocking off Alabama. I got Virginia losing first round. And she's got Indiana in the Sweet 16. And then my family, most of them are leaning towards KU, and so they're KU fans. But then my youngest is a K-Stater. So my youngest has K-State to the Sweet 16, losing to Marquette. And he has KU going to Final Four. Last year he picked KU to win it all, and he's not the KU fan. But it worked. And my oldest is... Got KU losing second round to Arkansas. Okay. Well, if McCullough doesn't play, that's possible. I've got KU losing Sweet 16 to UConn. My wife has UCLA beating Kansas. She has UCLA as a champion. So do I, because I changed that. Yesterday on the radio, I said Alabama, UCLA, and I picked Alabama. I changed it on my official bracket because the number one overall seed rarely wins it. Uh-huh. So I went with UCLA. And then my oldest has... My goodness, my oldest and my youngest argue all the time. They both agree they got Texas winning it all. So, interesting stuff there. All right, so sleepers. All right, so let's look real quickly. Who's your sleeper out of the South region? The sleeper out of the South. All right, you got Alabama. You've got Arizona. Baylor's a 3. Virginia, 4. San Diego State, a 5. The 6 is Creighton.
It's not just because
Missouri is 7. So who's your sleeper pick out of that? For me, it's San Diego State. I've got them as a 5 going to the Sweet 16. I guess that's not necessarily a sleeper, but I have them beating Furman in the second round. So I guess I'll have to say San Diego State.
It's not just because I'm rooting for them. I honestly do think Creighton has a chance to.
So Creighton's your sleeper?
Yeah.
To go how far?
To win the bracket. To win the South anyway.
You got Creighton winning.
I don't have them going, but if we're doing sleepers,
you think they can win? Your sleeper is your sleeper pick is they're going to make the Final Four.
Yeah,
you're insane.
I know.
I say that jokingly. Yeah. You might be right. It's possible.
There was just one thing I saw that I was kind of doubting it. Like, it's just because I'm rooting for them. But they did a efficiency thing where. Only teams that have won that you got to be so high in offense and so high in defense, and there's only like 7 or 8 teams in the bracket that are both, and Creighton was one of them. They're the last team you would think that that meet that criteria, but
well,
they do.
Didn't have a late turnover against Kansas last year. Yeah. Kansas might have been out in second round. Dusty, who's your sleeper in the South?
What's the? Definition of sleeper would be like 4
I would say if you got
South Virginia in the Elite Eight.
Well, then I would say that would be
that'd be my yeah. Be I mean, they're a 4 seed, but I don't know if you call a 4 a sleeper.
I would say
going the deepest.
I'll go with that. All right, now upset special in that region. I've got Furman over Virginia, 13-4. That's my upset. So you got Virginia sleeper. I got them out first round.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's your?
I think I picked Charleston to beat San Diego State, actually.
Okay, so that's your upset pick. You have an upset pick in that one?
Charleston.
Okay. In the East, by the way, we're going to talk Chiefs football coming up in a little bit, folks. It's interesting what the Chiefs did yesterday. In the East, I guess my sleeper's Duke. Sounds weird to say, but they're the 5, and I got them in the Final Four. So, and then in regards to an upset in the first round, I do think everybody's automatically putting Kentucky across the board. I think Providence isn't great, but I wouldn't be stunned at all if Kentucky loses first round. But I think Louisiana has got the best shot at pulling off a double-digit seed upset. I mean, I know Oral Roberts could, but everybody seems to be looking at that one. I like Louisiana possibly to beat Tennessee and set it up to where it could be an easy cakewalk for Duke to the Sweet 16. I say cakewalk, 12 and a 13. Oral Roberts is a good 12.
Right. So, as far as upsets, I do kind of have Providence winning the first one, and then my sleeper would kind of be Memphis to go through. Yeah,
Memphis to go through?
Yeah.
All right. That's an eight. Dusty?
I've got Oral Roberts actually beating Duke as well, I believe. I don't know that I really have a sleeper over here unless you consider K-State, because I don't think a lot of people think they're going anywhere with their defense and turnovers.
So that would be a sleeper, maybe.
That's the best I can do in that region as far as a sleeper is concerned, because everything else I think I have pretty well chalk.
All right. Midwest region, Houston's the one seed, Texas the two, Xavier the three, and the four seed is Indiana. My sleeper, that one, I don't know. I think the sleeper in that one for me would be Penn State. I'm not sold on A&M. I've got Penn State beating A&M in the first round. So I guess my sleeper would be Penn State to win a game or two, possibly. Next.
Yikes.
I will tell you, the Mississippi State Pitt game, the winner of that game could win two.
Yeah.
Could beat Iowa State, beat Xavier. If Xavier wins the first game.
First spot.
But I don't know which one to win that game tonight, so I can't really pick one. But.
Yeah, that'd be my first spot probably to pick an upset if I was going to pick one.
Yeah. All right, quickly.
I don't have a sleeper in there either. Like, I can't.
Not to go all the way.
I think Kent State could be Indiana.
Yeah.
I do. I really do. Indiana's been overrated, in my opinion. And then, so in regards to an upset special, I've got a couple in that region. I got a 10 over a 7, Penn State A&M. I actually have that in my bracket. And I think it's very possible Xavier loses first round. But I also think Indiana should be on upset alert. And I'll tell you, I think there's lots of upset alerts in this one, because Miami, if they don't have their best big, they only have one big that's really good, from what I understand, and they don't have him against Drake, that's a dangerous game for Miami. So I think you could, and there's some people think that Texas is going to have a tough time with Colgate. So it seems like that could be a bracket that could open up for Houston.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right, let's move on to the West. Who is the sleeper pick in the West?
TCU
that's
could be
mine.
The sleeper in the
that's
West
mine.
For sure.
That's mine. I got them in the I got them in the Sweet 16 beating Gonzaga in the second round.
I think I do too.
Yep, I got TCU as my sleeper. You sleeper? Jason, quickly.
Let's just go. I'll go TCU. I don't really.
And then the upset special or upset you could see happening, double digit seed possibly in that region. There's somebody yesterday picked Howard to beat Kansas, believe it or not.
I'm not going to do that.
It could happen. I mean, it's possible. They shoot the three. Anybody can shoot the three's got a shot.
VCU over St. Mary's.
Yeah, that one's intriguing to me. Rick Pitino is Iona against UConn.
If I was going to pick one, probably.
Like, UConn scares me in a matchup against Kansas, but if Iona takes care of business, that's not a problem. And there's another one, Arizona State, Nevada. Winner of that play-in game, could easily beat TCU. So it's just so wide open. There's no doubt. I got Boise beating Northwestern, by the way.
I actually have that, too.
Yeah, so I got a couple tens. All right, so we gave our Final Four picks yesterday. Anybody changing their picks?
Dustin's not
got
right
three
now.
Big 12 teams in the Final Four.
Not right
My wife's
now.
Got three Pac-12 teams in the Final Four. I've got SEC, ACC. I've got good diversity. SEC, ACC, Pac-12, AAC, and no Big 12 team in the Final Four in mine, which means... probably there'll be three.
Like I said, I reserve the right to change my mind between Alabama and Arizona, and maybe when it comes time to fill out that bracket, I might not go Xavier. But
Got Thursday till 11 o'clock to figure
that
out.
Right,
and Dusty will let people know about brackets and
I'll have it on social and stuff like that. So yep.
There are three in-state women's basketball teams competing in the WNIT. Matchups are set. K-State 17-16. They'll host 18-14 Wichita State at Bramlage at 6 o'clock. That'll be on Thursday night on ESPN+. And I was asked to fill in to do the women's game on Thursday. I thought I was done with basketball. I thought I was done. I'm like, well, it's not that far to drive to do Manhattan, do K-State, Wichita State. And I think that'll be kind of fun. KU women are 19-11, and they will host 19-13 Western Kentucky first round on Friday night at 5 o'clock. At Allen Fieldhouse. We end the show with some Chiefs talk, because you can't ever get enough football, even though it's NCAA tournament week. The Chiefs yesterday, of course, they didn't franchise tag Orlando Brown. That surprised some people. And once they didn't tag him, I didn't think he's coming back. And the Chiefs, it makes it pretty clear that they aren't planning on having him back because he costs too much, which he's not worth the money that he wants, in my opinion. The Chiefs have apparently found his replacement. The Chiefs have reached a deal with former Jaguars tackle Jawan Taylor on a 4-year, $80 million deal with $60 million guaranteed. Taylor played right tackle in Jacksonville, but he could move to left tackle for the Chiefs, and that's exactly what happened when the Chiefs traded and got Orlando Brown. They moved him from right tackle to left tackle. Juwan Taylor played left tackle in college, so he's familiar with left tackle. He's not played very much left tackle in the NFL, predominantly right tackle. He didn't have a great rookie year, but he really improved the last couple of years. His pressure rate is way better than Andrew Wiley and Orlando Brown. And by the way, Andrew Wiley's leaving. He signed a free agent deal with the Commanders, who now have Eric Bieniemy as their offensive coordinator. Wiley's going to sign a three-year, $24 million deal with the Washington Commanders. So the Chiefs get Juwan Taylor, and immediately people are like, well, that's sweet. We got a replacement for Andrew Wiley. I don't think that's the plan at all. I think the plan is Juwan Taylor's your left tackle. Mm-hmm. Because there are rumors out there, well, the Chiefs are still in negotiations to trade for Laremy Tunsil, who's an outstanding left tackle, one of the best five tackles in the game with the Houston Texans, and he's in the final year of his contract. Texans probably don't want to pay him. He's a young guy. Juwan Taylor, by the way, is only 25. So he's getting better. So the Chiefs, all these Chiefs fans that criticize this move already, I'm just like, dear God, have you not paid attention? In Veach, you trust. Just if the Chiefs could overcome losing Tyreek Hill, I think we can handle Orlando Brown departing. I mean, I'm just Lance the Spoken. I don't know if he's like getting paid by Orlando Brown's agent to promote him. He acts like Orlando Brown's the greatest tackle that's ever lived. No, the Chiefs are fine, and then he brings up numbers that you know support his agenda. But Juwan Taylor's a better pass blocking tackle than Orlando Brown. But he's not as good as a run blocker. Oh, big deal. The Chiefs don't run the ball anyway. So, and now people are like, well, he's not as good a run blocker. But do you know what the Chiefs do? They are not a run first team or a run second or a run third team, okay? It's RPOs the only time they run it, it seems like. So that's not a big deal. The Chiefs don't need, and they've got other guys that can maul and block run blockers, okay? And they got Pacheco who can break some tackles. I'm not caught up in how good a run blocker he is. If he's at least adequate, it's fine. You need to protect the blind side of Patrick Mahomes. The biggest question is the same question that was asked when they traded for Orlando Brown, and that is, can you make the adjustment and play really good left tackle, which is the blind side of Patrick Mahomes? Now, maybe the Chiefs' plan is to trade for Laremy Tunsil. Maybe they'll trade a 1 and a 2 and a 3, and they will, or a 1 and 2 threes. They got plenty of draft capital. They could do it. Many people don't think the Chiefs are going to give their first-round pick in the draft because they host it. And I think the Chiefs are actually going to trade up to make it an even bigger splash in Kansas City. I think they're going to trade up in the first round. I don't think they're giving up a first-round pick. Because they have 12 picks, and they're not going to use them all. So, they still could get Tunsil. Yeah, financially, they could. They could still go get Tunsil, sign him to a huge deal, put him at left tackle, and you've got Juwan Taylor right tackle, and you've got the youngest, most athletic offensive line in all of football, and it's not even close. Your oldest guy is Joe Tooney at left guard. I mean, that'd be a heck of an offensive line. But now, do you have the money to re-sign Juju Smith-Schuster? Do you have the money to help your defense and get a pass rusher replace Frank Clark? Or are the Chiefs thinking, listen, we're signing Juwan Taylor. We're going to give Chris Jones his extension. I think that's happening. And I think that's another reason why Orlando Brown is allowed to walk. And Juwan Taylor, I mean, it's $20 million per year average. That's less than what they'd pay Orlando Brown. Also, the deal that is being reported is that it's only $15 million in guaranteed money. So it's not like the Chiefs are going cheaper. They're going a discounted route here for a guy that's ascending, that is just as young as Orlando Brown, if not younger. And the only question mark is, can he play left tackle instead of right tackle? Unless the plan is to get Taylor Lewan to play left tackle, a free agent stopgap veteran from Tennessee, is a free agent, or it's to spend a ton of money and draft capital to go get Laremy Tunsil. Guys, I believe Juwan Taylor is your left tackle. I believe the Chiefs are going to, that Lucas Niang, they could play at right tackle, which he, you know, is coming off injury. I think they're going to draft a tackle or two, or they'll go pick up a free agent guy. I think the Chiefs feel like we can fill right tackle. I think the Chiefs are like, we can handle right tackle.
I think that's
but
the
left
route.
Tackle is, who are we going to put left tackle? We need a young guy, And I think they like. I mean, they would not make this move if they don't believe
it's
he can play left tackle.
Too much money to be making this move
right
to
tackle.
Not be playing left tackle.
I agree.
In my mind,
I agree.
Yeah,
especially the cap situation. You can't be paying a ton of money for a left and a right tackle.
And I don't think it's worth going out. And I think the Tunsil thing is off the table after this move is made, because I don't think it makes sense to go get Tunsil if you're only going to have him for a year and you don't have the money to pay him.
Well, you don't make the move for Tunsil unless you pay him.
Unless you're going to get him long term, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you don't even
and I just don't even think that – I don't think that's on the table anymore, to be honest with you.
I don't either.
I think they're going to go with Niang at right and draft somebody and hope that that's where they can be, because
right.
Niang is getting healthy again, and if he can, you know, put some weight back on again here and get back into the training program, I think that's their goal, is to have Niang at right tackle.
The other thing that – I mean, some people said you could move Joe Tooney to left tackle and put Allegretti at left guard, and that's possible. But Tooney's not really a left tackle, but he could probably fill in if there's an injury. The other thing at right tackle that the Chiefs could do is they got Kennard kid from Kentucky they drafted last year. I don't know how far he's come along, but maybe he can compete for the job at right tackle. So I think Juwan Taylor is your left tackle, and I think there is no Tunsil trade, and they're not going to trade a first-round pick when they're hosting the draft this year. And I think what Brett Veach – is, and this is the great thing about this, is I'm telling you guys, the Tyreek Hill trade set all this up. The Tyreek Hill trade continues to pay dividends for this team, and it will for years to come, because you were able to go cheaper on defense. You able to now you got a lot of guys on rookie contracts to go in their second year, so you don't have to worry about re-upping those guys. Now next year you're gonna have to think about Nick Bolton, and you're going to have to figure out Legarius Sneed. Every year, after a few years, you guys have been in the league, you guys start thinking about, okay, do we give them a long-term deal? Do we sign them early and save some money? Do we allow them to be in their final year and tag them and all that? But they're going to have more money in the books with Chris Jones when they sign him to an extension. I'm convinced that's happening. I don't know if it's the right move or not, but I'm convinced it's happening. They let go of Frank Clark. That saved money on the cap. Mahomes, eventually, he'll get more money than he is. They'll rework his deal to make more. They might not have to do it this year. They can restructure his right now to save quite a bit on the cap, but it'd be advantageous for them to wait another year to do that. But they could. If they want to go – let me put it this way. If the Chiefs wanted to go trade for Laremy Tunsil, they have the draft capital, and believe it or not, they do have the money to do it. They would probably then rework Mahomes' deal and move money around to make more cap space. But ideally, you would like to wait another year on that, because, one, you would like to bring back Juju Smith-Schuster, and you may want to bring in another edge rusher as a free agent or make a splash and have to pay a free agent. I don't know who's really truly out there. But the other thing that trade with Tyreek Hill did was it allowed them not to have such huge bloating contracts on the books. You know what I'm saying? Like, Justin Reed's a decent contract, but it doesn't make or break them. And with those draft picks hitting and those young guys playing on rookie deals, it gives you the flexibility to maybe get Laremy Tunsil, which I don't think is going to happen. Maybe it gives you flexibility to trade for DeAndre Hopkins and pay him. Maybe. I'm not saying they will. I'm just saying I think they have a little bit more flexibility than people realize, and that's mainly because of the Tyreek Hill deal. Now, you sign Chris Jones to an extension. Obviously, that leeway closes a little bit. If you would trade for Laremy Tunsil, that would obviously close the leeway, no doubt. I just think the Chiefs are going to do this. I think the Chiefs found their left tackle. I think they may feel good what's in-house and right tackle and then draft a guy to compete there. Or they may draft their right. They may move up in the draft in the first round and say, that's our right tackle at number 17. They might trade up from, 31 to 17 and say, we're gonna give up three or four picks to trade up from 31 to 17, and we're going to get a guy we think can play right tackle who maybe eventually will be our left tackle of the future. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And the Chiefs don't have glaring major needs. I think they need to find a successor to Kelce in the next couple years. Maybe that's a free agency. It doesn't have to be in the draft. I do think they have to find another edge rusher to get to the quarterback Frank Clark now. I think Karlaftis is okay, but I don't think he's a every down defensive end. So I think they need one or even two of those guys. I think the secondary is pretty good shape, but they could add you're losing Thornhill, so you maybe find a safety, whether it's free agency. The Bengals just lost both their safeties, by the way. The Bengals are starting to deal with the pain of being good, because now they're losing some of their better players. And T. Higgins wants a huge deal, and Burrow hasn't even gotten his big deal yet. So the Chiefs are sitting in better position than the Bengals are right now financially because of what's coming down the road with Burrow's contract. Higgins wants a ton of money. And I think the Chiefs are going to make moves like this. They're not going to go out and get the top. I don't think they're going to go out and get a top free agent on the market at any position and overspend for him. And I don't think they're going to trade tons of picks to get a guy that fills a need. I think the Chiefs are going to handle their needs with moves like this. Find a younger tackle that we can move and coach him up to be our left tackle. And now think about how young this line is. And I'm not Orlando Brown wasn't old. But that offensive line right now with the Chiefs, if Niang's your right tackle, that is a very young offensive line that would be under contract for a while. I mean, you're in pretty good shape for a few years. You know, and the stability, yeah, the chemistry, the cohesion with, you got Trey Smith and Tooney and Creed Humphrey in the middle, and then you adapt to the right tackle and left tackle. I like what the Chiefs are doing here. They can draft best available player. If they think the best available player at 31 is a wide receiver, then take him. If you think it's tight end, take him. If you think it's another tackle, take him. If you think it's a running back, okay, so be it. Take him. Whoever you think is the best available guy at 31, that's all the Chiefs need to do. Or there's a guy they really covet, and they got all the capital draft-wise to say, you know what, we'll package. We'll give you a third, a fourth, and a fifth, or whatever it takes to move up to number 17 or 16 or 18 or 12 or whatever it may be to get the stud receiver we love or the stud edge rusher we need or a tackle that, hello, there's our left tackle, and Taylor stays at right tackle. I'm not going to sit here and tell you there's a guaranteed thing that Jawan Taylor is your left tackle. If the Chiefs find a really good left tackle in the draft, Jawan Taylor may. Here's the great thing what the Chiefs have right now. They, by getting Jawan Taylor, they only have to fill one spot instead of two. And this guy, they could put at left or right, and they don't have to force him to be left right away. They could see what happens in the draft, and they may find that their left tackle, the best left tackle, is in the draft, and Taylor stays at right. Or they may find out that, okay, the guy we're going to draft is right tackle, and Jawan Taylor is our left tackle no matter what. Maybe they made that decision. The point I'm trying to make is, by signing Jawan Taylor, you have some flexibility. You didn't break the bank to get him. He's only 25, and he's been getting better. And his pressure rate, he's a better pass blocker than Andrew Wiley and Orlando Brown. Last year, he was. Uh-huh. And he was with Trevor Lawrence at quarterback, who can move around. Mahomes moves around. And I'm not worried about the run block thing. I think it's a really good move. There's some people saying it's not a great move. They don't like it. I say all you got to do is look what Brett Veach did last year. I think the Chiefs have a master plan. They hit it out of the park last year. There's no reason to doubt Brett Veach and what the Chiefs are doing now. And I would rather them go get Jawan Taylor and make this move than give up a ton of draft capital and then lock themselves in a long-term deal with a guy that was, you know, was dropped in the draft because he was caught with a bong, okay? And fell.
A little more sophisticated.
I don't know if he's the smartest guy in the world.
Wait,
I don't know if he's the sharpest tool in the shed, is what I'm trying to say. And don't get me wrong, Tunsil's a great tackle. But I don't think the Chiefs have to give up that much of their assets to get the left tackle.
No,
is my point.
Not at all.
I think they got.
They're not desperate.
Right. And I think Orlando Brown, people are going to have differing opinions on it. I thought he was good. I don't know.
I thought he was solid.
Yeah,
it wasn't great.
It wasn't great. Nah. So I think they got Taylor, who's, you put him at left tackle, he's probably going to be good, yep, or just like Orlando Brown.
Which is fine. Which is money to have the same type,
right,
of guy.
And I was just going to say, you're going to save a few million dollars there. Yeah. You at least have Niang that you can try at right tackle. And this is kind of the way, I know Wiley kind of turned out a little bit better than what everybody kind of thought at first, but this was, this is how the Chiefs did it the last 2 years. So why can't they do it again with, maybe somewhat of a question mark at right tackle, like Wiley was when he kind of took over, but it all worked out. So why can't you go with that way again? And you saved a few million dollars. There's nothing to say you can't make a move mid-season too. At some point,
if you
keep your flexibility a little bit.
Yeah, you might make a little bit of a move, mm-hmm, if there's a guy that's out there, but you're probably not going to address your tackle situation. But the Jawan Taylor, I want to pull up Orlando Brown and see how old. I don't want the Orlando Brown.
Orlando Brown's a year older than Jawan Taylor. I looked it up yesterday. Okay. He's like 25 and 200, 300 some days, and Taylor's like.
So here's a little bit more on Jawan Taylor. Jawan Taylor's 25. He was a second round pick by Jacksonville back in 2019. He started every available game in his career, so he's been durable. Last year was a very solid one for him. He allowed just 5 sacks and 16 pressures overall. Did a nice job protecting up-and-coming quarterback Trevor Lawrence. He would now protect Mahomes from the blind side if he is indeed playing left tackle. The average annual value of his contract now will be less than what Brown was on the tag last year for. Nate Taylor covers the Chiefs, put this out on Twitter today. He says, for more context, the Chiefs believe Juwan Taylor is an exceptional and ascending athlete, a durable, consistent blocker. And here's an interesting point. Played in a similar offense last season under Doug Peterson, which is an Andy Reid disciple. That is a very good point. You know, Brett Veach, he was, and by the way, one more thing about this. Juwan Taylor had the third lowest pressure rate allowed, 2.5% among all tackles last year. Third best behind Tristan Wirfs with the Buccaneers and Lane Johnson with the Eagles. And those guys are older. Wirfs a younger guy, but Johnson's older. That's pretty impressive. The Chiefs are getting an ascending player. Brett Veach said this at the Combine. I don't know if you guys saw this. They were asking Brett Veach, you know, how does he go about, you know, they asked, you know, you missed out on some guys when you took Mecole Hardman. You know, yet DK Metcalf was there. There were other guys that were there. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you could add T. Higgins. You know, what if? And Brett Veach says, well, what you guys focus on all the numbers. You focus on the height. You focus on the strength. You focus on the speed. You focus on what they did in college, their stats and all this. He said, but we have an interview process, and we're not necessarily looking for the guy that blows you away with numbers. Part of the equation, and I'm paraphrasing what he's saying here, but part of the equation, and he stressed this, was does the player fit our culture?
Yeah.
Does the player fit our locker room? And he goes, that's what the interviews are about. We may have a guy that may be more talented, but we believe this guy's going to be a better fit for our locker room, or we believe that this guy is going to listen more to the leaders of our locker room, like Patrick and Chris Jones and Travis Kelce. He was talking about these things. I'm like, the guy gets it, and they're 2-time Super Bowl champion with Veach there. I mean, he gets it, and this to me makes total sense. Juwan Taylor, is he the flashiest tackle that's available out there? No, that's Laremy Tunsil. But Juwan Taylor costs considerably less. Juwan Taylor is in a system with Doug Peterson, so it shouldn't be as big an adjustment for him to go to Kansas City as it was for Orlando Brown, who was in a run-blocking-oriented scheme with the Ravens. And Orlando did a decent job, no doubt. But this might be an easier transition with Juwan Taylor. And people get all caught up in, well, he hasn't played left tackle really since college. Well, the Chiefs believe he can, apparently. And they wouldn't make the move and give the guy $80 million if they didn't think he could be their left tackle. They wouldn't do it. I agree with Dusty. They ain't paying $80 million for him to be a right tackle. So they believe he's an ascending player. I think what they're trying to say is they don't think Orlando Brown's an ascending player. They believe that we're gonna pay a little bit less, and we're going to get a improving player who's been very durable in a similar system compared to keeping a guy that we know all about, that we apparently don't think is ascending anymore, or isn't worth that ascension. And this guy's a better pass blocker, and guess what? We pass the ball a lot. I think it makes complete sense. Now, Juwan Taylor might be a train wreck. He might not be able to play left tackle. We might find out that he's going to be back the right tackle, and the Chiefs have a major problem at left tackle. It's very possible. Or they got to get Taylor Lewin as a stopgap measure. Maybe, I'm not saying Brett Veach is perfect. He's made mistakes before earlier in his career in the draft, but he's made some really great picks, and last year he was just absolutely A+. This all adds up to what he was talking about. Guys that fit the culture, fit the locker room, fit our offense, fit our defense. Like, a lot of people get lost in the draft and they go, why didn't they get this guy? Because that doesn't fit Spags' defensive scheme. That's why they didn't get this guy. Well, this guy was on the board. Why would we? Like, a lot of people want King Felix, as I say, because I can't pronounce his whole name, from Kansas State. There are a lot of people like, well, he should be first, second round. K-State's got to get him. Or the Chiefs got to get that K-State player. And that's fine and all. And I would love to see it, but only if it's the fit. Like, if he doesn't work in Spag's system, if they don't believe King Felix, even though on the board Mel Kiper Jr. has him as the next available, top available guy, edge rusher that's in the draft when they come and pick at 31, and the Chiefs take a defensive edge rusher that's rated 2 guys below King Felix, K-State fans are going to freak out and go, what are the Chiefs doing? Some Chiefs fans are like, what are the Chiefs doing? And what you don't know is, well, he might not have interviewed as well. Two, they might have liked the guy better. Three, they might think there's more upside with this guy instead of King Felix. Four, they may just say, you know what? King Felix is a great player, but he doesn't fit what Spags likes to do. Because people overlook this all the time. Why are we drafting this guy when we could have this guy? Well, this guy fits Andy Reid's offense better. You know, why didn't we get George Pickens and trade up to get George Pickens? Well, hey, a great guy. I would love to have George Pickens. The Chiefs could have traded up and beat the Steelers and got George Pickens. They had the draft capital. They were content to stay where they were, keep draft picks, which paid off, and got Sky Moore, who they're high on, that they feel is a great fit for what the Chiefs do. Now, I don't think anybody's going to argue George Pickens is a better athlete than Sky Moore, perhaps, although Sky Moore's a pretty good athlete. But they liked the fit with Sky Moore and didn't believe it was worth drafting and moving up and giving up picks to go get George Pickens. They obviously, when they got Mecole Hardman, and I think part of that was the Tyreek Hill situation at the time, but they're like, speed, 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 and this fits what we want to do, maybe more so. And there were some red flags around DK Metcalf at the time. In fairness to people that rip the Chiefs drafting Mecole Hardman instead of DK Metcalf, what people forget is DK Metcalf had a serious neck injury that every team in the league except Seattle passed twice. Okay? So not once, twice. But it all makes sense to me. This all makes sense to me. It absolutely fits the persona of what the Chiefs are trying to do. They save money by not re-signing Orlando Brown. They save money by not tagging Orlando Brown. They now have signed a 25-year-old tackle, whether he plays right or left, which I believe will be left. They've signed a younger ascending tackle, and he's locked up for 4 years. What's not to like about that? They didn't go get a 31-year-old tackle to play for the night. They didn't. You know, remember all the talk about getting Trent Williams a few years ago? Well, we got to get Trent Williams. And he was like 37 at the time, or 38. Like, I don't want to go get an old guy. And he's a great Trent Williams is a great tackle, one of the best in the game. But did you want to, with wear and tear, do you want to give that guy a long-term deal or a 3 or 4 year deal? Don't you want to go younger? And that's what the Chiefs did. They went younger. They traded draft capital. They signed Orlando Brown. They brought him in. They moved him left tackle. And you know what? To Orlando Brown's credit, he did a good job. He's a Pro Bowler multiple times. He wasn't horrible at all, but he wasn't a superstar top five tackle. No. But he did his job. The Chiefs won a Super Bowl after they got him. You can't argue with that. But to me, I think this is a terrific move by the Chiefs. I think it is. It just goes along the lines of being shrewd, it being ahead of the curve, going out and get a guy that you like, and don't, you know, pussyfoot around. Just go get him. The Chiefs' first day of legal tampering, as they call it, went out and got a guy to fill at least one of their two voids on the offensive line. Now they only have to find one tackle to replace, if they even feel that way. They might think Niang and Kennard are the guys that are going to play right tackle, and they're good with it. We don't know, but it makes sense.
Yeah. That is so funny you bring the Trent Williams, because that was like a done deal, and then he had to change of heart and said, no, I'm going to stay in San Francisco.
Which might have been a blessing in disguise.
I think it was in the end. I don't think they got hurt by not having Trent Williams on this team, that's for sure. So they did. They were younger at the position. They weren't established at the position like Trent Williams is, right? But they were younger at the position with Orlando Brown, and now they're a year younger again with a 26 compared to a 25-year-old now with what they've made and the move that they made here, well, officially tomorrow, but yesterday, to bring a new tackle in. So, yeah, I feel like this is it's a very Brett Veach move. It's something that you look at, and it's like, why would you not trust it right now? Like, right. I don't think anybody should be, like, questioning the moves that are being made when you've won two Super Bowls
right
in the last, 4 years, right? So, right. And it's like, I don't think I'm going to question that right now, because there's two Lombardis in the house, I'm just going to let the guy do his job. You know, like I feel like he knows what he's doing, and I feel like he's got a plan. Not just, again, like with you talk about Tyreek Hill trade, like this plan is not just to win for a year.
No,
his plan
set it
is
up.
Mapped out,
yes.
And it has been since he became the GM.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's mapped this out since Patrick Mahomes became a part of this team.
Absolutely.
And so, what's there right now to to dispute about the way he's done it. And I don't think there's anything. I mean, you can always go back and say, hey, if the Tyreek Hill thing didn't happen, Mecole Hardman might not be on this team.
Right.
You might have a different wide receiver there. But, I mean, you can always go back and look at some of the little things like that.
Sure.
But as far as a grand scheme of what he's done, there's no reason to doubt it.
Yeah, I mean, some people say Clyde Edwards-Helaire was a mistake, first-round running back. I mean, he's been a serviceable, solid
running
back.
Yeah, and I don't think it was. I feel like Clyde's dealt with some injuries and maybe didn't develop like they thought he would as a blocker and a pass catcher.
His numbers have been better than people think.
Yeah, just didn't pan out the way it looked like it should have, because Clyde looked like a prototypical Chief, a perfect guy for Andy Reid's system.
I thought he'd catch more balls out of the backfield, too. I'm with you on that one. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the other thing, too, is if he was a third-round pick, people would be talking about what a solid pick that was.
Absolutely.
But because he was the last pick of the first round, I think it was. And that's the other thing. If he's the second pick of the second round, I don't think it's looked on the same way. And all we're talking about is the difference of a few picks. I do believe that unless you think it's a superstar, you don't draft a running back
people
in the
get
first
like
round.
That first round designation, and people and think, he's a first round. Well, yeah, but he was like a pick away from the second round. So the first round picks are not all created equal, people.
Exactly right. And so some other free agency news, this is coming out today. The Raiders are signing Patriots free agent wide receiver Jacoby Myers to a 3-year, $33 million deal with $21 million guaranteed. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to sign with the Raiders. He'll be their new quarterback. 3 years, $67.5 million deal with $34 million guaranteed. I mean, that's a good signing for the Raiders. I think it's a parallel move between Carr and Garoppolo, except Garoppolo is not going to cost as much as Carr was going to cost. And Garoppolo, if he stays healthy, he's usually pretty solid statistically. And the 49ers agreed a one-year deal with Sam Darnold to add to their quarterback room. Aaron Rodgers has not officially been traded yet. Some people reported that yesterday, and of course we're wrong. So we don't know if Aaron Rodgers is going to do what Brett Favre did and eventually go from the Packers and play for the Jets, and then eventually play for the Vikings and then have everybody mad at him. I don't know how that's all going to work. But Aaron Rodgers looks like he's on his way out of Green Bay. Green Bay's been using – their GM's been using his career as in the past tense. Have you noticed that in interviews?
Yeah.
So, Jordan, it's time to give it to Jordan Love. You drafted him in the first round, not to let him sit on the bench forever. But I want to get back to the wide receiver thing. Jacoby Myers, 3 years, $33 million with $21 million guaranteed. And you may say, well, okay, I don't know a lot about Jacoby Myers, or what's the big deal? Why are you bringing up a wide receiver like this? Well, there's a wide receiver that a lot of Chiefs fans would like to have back, and I know I would too, is Juju Smith-Schuster. That's not a horrible contract. If that's going to be kind of the area we're talking here, the Chiefs can easily do Juju Smith-Schuster for 3 years, $35 million range.
Right.
Easily.
Yeah.
Easily could do that. So I think that's a good thing. Now, remember what happened last year. Everybody thought the Chiefs were going to do an extension with Tyreek Hill, and next thing you know, Christian Kirk got a big overpriced contract with the Jaguars. And then the next thing happened, Davante Adams got traded to the Raiders, and they gave him $28 million a year. And it's like, oh, well, Tyreek's like, well, I'm worth more than 20. I'm worth more than Davante Adams. And his price went up, and that's what forced the Chiefs to eventually say, no, Moss, we can't go any higher than what we offered you. And that was a blessing in disguise. In this case, the numbers actually aren't as bad as compared to that situation. And so, you know, that kind of sets a bit of a bar. Jacoby Myers, I don't know exactly his stats from last year. I'm going to pull it
up. Well, he was good at helping the Raiders win last year, so the Raiders...
It is ironic that's where he's going. Yeah, it is ironic that that's where he's going, but I'm going to pull up... but his numbers are very similar. He had 67 catches, 804 yards, six touchdown catches, okay? That's what he had. Jacoby Myers is 26. I believe Juju's 26 as well. A lot of people don't realize that Juju's pretty young.
Feels like he's older just as much as he's been in the spotlight, right? Like people just like...
Right. But let me pull up...
Think like he's really old and he's not.
Let me pull up Juju's stats. So Jacoby Myers, 67 catches, 804 yards, and six touchdowns, okay? And Juju had 78 catches for 933, very comparable, and three touchdowns.
Yeah.
I mean, that contract for Myers doesn't set the bar too high for the Chiefs to bring back Juju, and I think Juju wants to come back. So I think he's going to be back, and I don't think he's going to break the bank. And he's only 26, so if you lock him in for – I think the key is going to be the length of the deal. If he can get a longer contract with more guaranteed money – he'd be wise to go somewhere else. But I think he likes working with Mahomes. I think he knows that, hey, I'm relevant here in Kansas City. He loves to be a TikTok guy. He loves to, you know, have fun and make fun of A.J. Brown all the time, apparently. I would love to have Juju back, and I think they can get him a decent price. So the Jacoby Myers contract actually is a good thing for the Chiefs. That the Raiders this year, the receiver last year that forced Tyreek Hill out of Kansas City in a roundabout way, that helped the Chiefs in a roundabout way. Now, a contract the Raiders are making with another wide receiver actually may help the Chiefs keep Juju Smith-Schuster. Raiders, we love you. Why do we hate you so much? You keep helping us.
It's going to be, it might be a little bit more, but it's going to be almost the savings that they got from Orlando Brown to the tackle they just signed will almost pay for the raise that Juju Smith-Schuster will get.
Yeah.
It's pretty close.
It's very possible.
I mean, it's a little bit higher.
Sure.
But, yeah.
In that range, yeah. Yep. And so when you can do that and be smart with your money, just like in you live everyday life, budgeting, and that's what this is, you're budgeting. And the other thing you talked about, the Chiefs plan ahead, they already have planned ahead. I guarantee you they've already said, Nick Bolton, we've got to take care of him next year. And they've already looked at, you know what, if we, when they draft, they're not thinking just this year. They may draft a corner to be the replacement for L'Jarius Sneed, and then they trade Sneed so they don't have to give him a ton of money. I mean, they let Javarius Ward go, didn't they? Mm-hmm. Their top corner. The Chiefs lost their top wide receiver and their top corner and still won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
By their own choice. By their own choice, they got rid of their best corner and their best wide receiver. By choice. And still won the Super Bowl. Got better on both sides of the ball without those players. So they've already identified, I can guarantee you, here's a guy we want here for a long time. We're going to take care of Nick Bolton. There's no doubt the Chiefs are going to take care of Nick Bolton.
Yeah.
As long as he stays healthy. L'Jarius Sneed is more of a, do we give that much to him when we could have plenty of other options and we can address it in the draft? So when the Chiefs draft this year and you see the Chiefs end up getting, if the Chiefs draft a couple corners, you're like, why are we drafting more corners? We've already got these young corners. You better think about that one. That the Chiefs are setting the map to trade Sneed probably, or not give him a big deal. And if you, what are the Chiefs doing drafting a safety? Well, Juan Thornhill's not coming back more than likely. He's going to get a decent deal on the open market. The other thing is when you if you get Juju back, Mecole Hardman's probably gone because they really like Kadarius Toney. Now whether he can stay healthy, I don't know. But don't be shocked if the Chiefs draft a wide receiver if it's a best available guy out there. Don't be stunned by this. You know, I think a lot of people just automatically think the Chiefs aren't going to do anything at wide receiver. They're going to bring Juju back. They're going to keep the gang together. Sky Moore is going to get better, which he should. Kadarius Toney is going to, they love Kadarius Toney. If he stays healthy, look out. The Chiefs don't have to do anything at wide receiver. I would argue, what if Sky Moore doesn't develop much more? Kadarius Toney is hurt all the time, which his career proves that it's true. Then you do need another wide receiver. So whether it's a free agent guy like a Justin Watson, whether it's another guy like a Juju Smith-Schuster last year that came over that wanted to kind of resurrect his career, there I think the Chiefs could easily bring in another wide receiver. I don't think they're just going to stand pat.
Yeah, so with MVS and Juju and think you're good. I mean, I think any opportunity you have, if you can find somebody at wide receiver with this offense, is going to be an addition that they're going to want to keep on there. I mean,
but they don't have to go the route of trading for DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah,
like I like that idea, but I don't think they need to do that.
No, I don't think they need to do that. But if you can find a guy in the draft like that you like, when you look at what happened in the AFC Championship game, and you were literally down to MVS with
Marcus Kemp
experience. I mean, Marcus Kemp is catching important passes in the AFC Championship. So just based on looking at that game alone, you know there's room for more guys in that wide receiver room that could do some things for you.
Right.
And I realize, you know, you had injuries. Guys were back for the Super Bowl like Kadarius Toney and did big things for you in the Super Bowl. You know, Sky Moore, I can't say did big things. He caught one big pass, obviously, that was a touchdown.
Right.
But, you know, you don't know that who Sky Moore is yet. And if you find a guy that you think could be even better than him and could, you know, obviously take the place of a Mecole Hardman who's constantly injured, like you talk about Kadarius Toney, but Mecole Hardman's on that same path right now. Like he's hurt so much, and especially this last year, right? But he's dealt with some little things throughout his career. But,
right.
You know, there's always room, I think, when Patrick Mahomes is your quarterback to find weapons for him.
This is just out 36 minutes ago, according to somebody, Aaron Wilson, NFL. No deal is imminent, but according to Aaron Wilson, the Texans and the Chiefs have spoken of a potential deal for Laremy Tunsil. More than rumors, according to the report, but doesn't mean there will be an actual deal. So apparently there are discussions.
I just don't see it happening. Maybe
I don't either.
Maybe I'll be proven wrong on that.
I don't either. But if it does happen, I don't think that I don't see Texans trading without getting the first round pick this year, unless the Chiefs say, we will give you, because they got enough draft capital, we'll say, we'll give you a 2, 3, and 5 this year, and we'll give you our first round pick next year. Because we want to keep ours because we're hosting the draft. Maybe the Texans would go for that. And listen, if I'm the Texans and I could get a 1, 2, and a 5, even if it's a 1 next year, because it's a late first anyway, I would do it. Because then you don't have to pay the guy a ton of money, and the Chiefs are the ones that are going to have to do it. So if I'm the I don't know how many other people are really going after Laremy Tunsil in the trade, but I just don't think the Chiefs have to go there. I don't.
No, I don't either.
But if they do, I will, as I've said before,
trust and be trade.
In Veach we trust. And Corpus Crispy is going to be Chris to a... Never mind.
$18.5 million is probably what it would be to get Tunsil for this year.
Yeah, but that'll be ripped up because they're going to give him the big contract. So that doesn't even apply. It's 18, on the books now. The Chiefs aren't going to trade him, and he comes in without a big-time deal. So they'll rip that up and change that all up.
Yeah,
but you're right. On the books right now, $18.5 million. Brown was 16.6 last year, okay, in regards to that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no way they're going to trade for a guy and not give him a ton of money when he's going to his final year's contract. And so the question then is, how much would he get? And I'm hearing probably $25 million a year.
Right.
$25 million a year? When you just gave $20 million a year to Juwan Taylor? That doesn't make sense to me. That doesn't sound like a Chiefs move.
None of it adds up at all.
To me, that means that you're not going to extend Chris Jones. And I think you're doing that.
Yeah, there's a point. You're going to have to say no to somebody, and that's probably Chris Jones. If you do take on this Tunsil deal, but that's the nature of the beast. You got to say goodbye to some people, and the team that the Chiefs just beat, the Eagles, are going through it too. They've lost 3 starters, I think, on the defensive side, and the Saints were in, salary cap purgatory, and they lost the whole defensive line, and it's just the way it goes. Yeah, if you want to add some things, you gotta get rid of some things, and they made a big one in Tyreek Hill, and sometimes those moves are Juan Thornhill, sometimes they're Tyreek Hill, sometimes they're little moves, but it's the nature of the business. I don't see it either, but at the same time, if you do it, man, you have Patrick Mahomes. You have him, in theory, protected for years.
Yes, true. And the other thing is with Mahomes, when they won the first Super Bowl, that line wasn't great. Steve Wisniewski was pulled off the street in the middle of the year, and they won a Super Bowl. Then the year after, when you're having a right tackle play left tackle, and you got... and your left tackle got hurt the game prior to the Super Bowl, they were scrambling, obviously. And then everybody talked about how the offensive line was so bad. Well, it was in that game, but if Mitchell Schwartz and Eric Fisher are healthy, the Chiefs were fine.
Yeah.
And they weren't. And so then they went and addressed it. They drafted Creed Humphrey. They drafted Trey Smith. They brought in Joe Tooney. And then eventually they got Orlando Brown. They changed their offensive line. And then we saw that it's been pretty solid. And that now everybody's like, you have to have a great offensive line to win the Super Bowl. And that's not true. The Chiefs proved that's not true. Now, the Chiefs had Tyreek Hill. They don't have him now, so maybe that's where you shift your money from Tyreek Hill to making offensive line the best in the National Football League. And I'm not sitting here and telling you the offensive line isn't important. It is. But here's my question. If he can win a Super Bowl with a not a good offensive line, average probably is what it was, right? Would you agree?
Yeah.
Or it was good. It was good.
It was above average that night.
Right.
But as far as the season, I would say it was good to a little above average throughout the year.
I would say it was a top 15 offensive line. Last year, it's a top 5 offensive line. The Super Bowl was one of the worst offensive line performances in the history of the game, but there were some extra factors involved in that. But my point is this. If Juwan Taylor, you believe, can play left tackle, and you find a guy, because Andrew Wiley, for crying out loud, nobody thought he would do what he did, and they were fine at right tackle, and people were freaking out about right tackle even during the season. And they were fine, and they still won 14 games. They didn't have a superstar at right tackle. It's an undrafted guy that's playing right tackle. So you've got the interior 3 that are solid, that are Pro Bowl material, and 2 are young, and now you've addressed the left tackle with Taylor. In my opinion, that's where he's going to be. Why do you have to get Laremy Tunsil to feel like you've got to win a Super Bowl with Laremy Tunsil? That's my point. Like, You need a good offensive line, but I don't think you need a Hall of Fame offensive line in front of Patrick Mahomes. That's my point.
You don't need to be tying up, on average, $45 million a year
in that position.
Two positions. Yeah. On one position, really, tackle. But on each side, right? You're not tying up $45 million a year on any line.
And eventually, you have to pay Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith in a couple years as well.
Yeah.
I just, this doesn't add up.
No.
I think it's a whole bunch of smoke being thrown out.
Yeah. I don't buy it at all.
Well, there you go.
That's me.
We don't think they're getting Laramie Tunsil, which is great. Dispensaries everywhere say, darn it.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.